I kind of had a choice at that point.
Not just being patient with the process, but being grateful with the process.
And I'm like, man, I went to my dad straight after the game. I'm like, yo, like this shit can't happen anymore, man. I always try to take the good out of any negative situation.
You know, I have players coming in, Xavier, and they'd be like, you know, I played so bad. You know, sometimes I'd be like, hey, bro, hey, I don't know, we can't do nothing about that. I can tell you what we can do, we can get some work in right now.
Like, if you're not doing plyometrics, you're losing out on a lot of potential for performance.
My dad had these tapes of the Laker game. I got to a point where I said, you know, I want to play basketball. And I just always wanted to make sure I had the edge over people.
It became a part of me, you know, I didn't want anybody to get to be better than me.
Welcome back to another episode of the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I appreciate, first and foremost, for everyone's patience. Had a lot of stuff going on, basically trying to be a one-man army. So I kind of had to put the podcast on the back burner a little bit. But I appreciate everyone's patience and just kind of just allowing me to kind of navigate, do my thing. But like I said, today is going to be a special Q&A episode. I got a lot of questions because I asked a lot of questions before, kind of held on to them, didn't really put out an episode. So today I'm going to go through all of them. I'm not going to give out usernames just because I don't see them. I have to go back to my archive and my Instagram. But if I, for whatever reason, did not give complete thought to your question, or maybe you want a little bit deeper dive, feel free to message me. I try to get back to everyone. It's kind of challenging when a lot of people are messaging me at the same time, but I will definitely do my due diligence to try to get through those. Hopefully you guys appreciate the episode about kind of like my background, where I came from. It was definitely a story that I needed to tell. And there's definitely some other stuff I didn't even include to think about that I thought about later on. But anyhow, I want to hop right into this episode. So let's start off with the first question. It's a pretty dope question too. I think my man Asa actually asked this, but intern life and strength and conditioning and how to navigate and succeed. So I'm going to answer this, but also give a little bit more background too. And not a lot of people know this, and I'm going to share this just to be honest, but it's going to also give a lot more clarity. During my time as an intern, I was not the greatest intern. I would say I was a little bit distracted. I was going through some relationship things at the time. I was also trying to graduate, also trying to find a job. There was a lot of things going on in my focus. I was not as locked in as I should have been as an intern, but that kind of gives me more clarity looking back. But a few things that I will note, and this is my personal opinion. Everyone has articles about these all over the place. But for me, going through an internship, number one thing is you have to be hungry for the opportunity. And I know that's kind of cliche, but there are literally, like, who knows, thousands of young interns across the country that would love to be at, you know, whatever Division I, Division II, whatever, wherever you are, they would love to be in your position to learn what you're learning. There are some people out here that, you know, literally come from nothing that want an opportunity that you have. So the one thing is just obviously showing gratitude, saying, you know, I'm thankful for this opportunity. I was not in a position, or I was in a position where I didn't feel like I was showing the gratitude that I should have, because that opportunity can easily just be let go. So gratitude and the hunger is the number one thing. You know, if you're showing to an internship, but you're not asking questions, if you're not intrigued with what the coach is doing, if you're not offering up insight, if you're not, you know, jumping at the opportunity to even just warm the players up, that is just going to show that you're not 100% invested in what you're doing. You got to have a passion for this. To be honest, there's not a lot of money in it. I think a lot of people, don't get me wrong, you will see the strength coaches that are making six figures and things like that. But they are damn near in the one percentile. You may see Instagram, you may see some people doing these things, followers, but at the end of the day, you have got to be passionate about what it is that you're doing. I'm not trying to deter you from whoever is interested in becoming a coach. I'm not trying to deter you, but I need to be honest that a lot of these opportunities that are out here may not necessarily be as lucrative financially. They're going to take a big commitment as far as your time, your energy, your attention. So making sure, one, if you're coming in hungry, that's just going to be a good indicator that you're going to be in it for the long haul, at least from the start. And don't get me wrong, there's a bunch of other things that I'm not even considering that's not going to say, okay, for sure, you're hungry, you're going to stick with this full time, long term. But if you're showing up to an internship and you're bored, then it's not a good look. Show up on time. You know, I think that was kind of obvious, but all it takes is one time. You know, if you're 1 minute late, that's not a good look. You know, if you're 15 minutes early, you know, you're still technically on time. So always be on time, but more than that, you got to be early. And that goes back to just showing the commitment and how intrigued you are, interested you are. You should be beating the head strength coach to the facility, in my personal opinion. And that's just coming through experience. Definitely understand that it's not just the X's and O's. I think a lot of people have questions about programming. They'll say, you know, if a coach asks them, you know, what do you want to learn about? And if the first thing out of your mouth is programming, they're probably going to tell you like you're asking the wrong questions. And I'm telling you this from experience. One of the first questions that one of my mentors asked me was, you know, what do you want to learn about? I said programming, obviously, because I'm like, oh, I'm trying to be a good coach. And I don't remember how long he went off on me, but it was probably about 10 to 15 minutes where basically he told me, you know, programming is and training is 1 hour out of the day. Right. Like if you got one team, let's say, you know, there's another, who knows, 8 or 9 hours of other things that you got to take accountability for. Like, are you getting players in study hall? Like, are they showing up to class on time? At times, the coaches will come to you and they may expect you to handle any players that need to be reprimanded. Unfortunately, that's a whole other topic. I disagree with that. But, you know, there's other things that go on, like administration, like what's your relationship with them? You know, obviously, like you have coaches meetings. There's a bunch of things that I'm not even talking about right now that go into being a strength and conditioning coach. Even just cleaning the weight room or even stocking up on any supplements. You know, if the intern is not doing that and the head strength coach is doing that. So while I do understand getting the intern to do it, it's also great experience to understand that being a strength coach, you're just not saying sets and reps. You're not just telling them, oh, okay, like this is all I do every day. There is a lot more that goes into it. So being prepared for those other things, like ask questions that don't relate to programming. Ask them maybe how they deal with players that are not necessarily keen on listening to you in the weight room. How do you deal with unruly players? How do you deal with unruly or coaches that maybe disagree with what you're doing? How do you deal with administration? Like, you know, if you had to pick up your checks, you know, is that something that, you know, you should probably think about in the future? Like, there are so many questions that you could be asking, that you could be learning more about, that programming is such a small part of it. And the X's and O's of strength conditioning, it's very, very minimal compared to what everything else goes into it. And I think great mentors do a good job of making sure that their interns understand that while, yes, training is fun, you know, there's other shit that we got to do, you know, that may not necessarily be as fun, even in the private sector, right? I mean, people do see my Instagram and they see me training players, but there's also, you know, I have to sit down for the coaches meetings. I have to talk to the parents. You know, scheduling can be crazy outside of like facility costs and things like that. There's just a lot more that goes into training than specifically just the X's and O's. So hopefully that answered your question. I know I kind of went off on a tangent a little bit, but understand that going in, you got to be hungry, ask questions, always be proactive. Don't wait for the coach to tell you to do something, do it without being asked. Ask questions that do not pertain to X's and O's and programming. show interest for the industry as a whole. That way, you, when you get into the situation, you understand how to navigate, how to move, you know, if you're in a position, you know, what you need to do. And I also understand that, you know, it's an opportunity that maybe not a lot of people get. I was in a position that not everyone got. You know, people are literally sending applications in. And because I had built a quality relationship with someone who was friends with my mentor, it was a lot more of a smooth transition for me. And so definitely, that's a great question. If you do want to learn more about interning, just go ahead and shoot me a message, because there's tons of stuff that I can talk about. And I don't want to take up the entire podcast talking about that, but for sure. All right, let's see. Strength conditioning certs. What's good? What's bad? What's too few? What's too many? This is a good question. So what's good? What's bad? So some of this is going to be subjective. And it also depends on where exactly you would like to work. I think a lot of people will ask me, you know, what my certifications are, you know, what I kind of decided to study, things like that. Understand that while certifications do show, hey, like, you know your shit, quote unquote, at the end of the day, it's a piece of paper, and you make the piece of paper worth something. All right. So the piece of paper does not make you worth something. So basically, what is good and what is bad? I mean, it depends. Do you want to work in the college sector? So you're probably going to need your CSCS or even your SCC. Those are definitely two certifications that are considered the gold standard of collegiate strength and conditioning. If you're going to go the SCC route, that is going to be, for those who don't know, it's a strength and conditioning coach certification. But if you are going to work in college athletics, that is one you can definitely look into. The process of getting that certification, it's going to be a little bit different versus the CSCS, where you do have, I mean, pretty much like a practical portion. Like, you're going to sit in front of other collegiate strength and conditioning coaches. You're going to have the program for them. They're going to audit your program. So it's a little bit more hands-on, but the process is that way to weed out the people who are not interested and to also build quality coaches. So I think that's definitely one route that you can take if you want to get into collegiate strength and conditioning. Obviously, the other one is the CSCS, which is, I would say, I don't want to call it the gold standard, but it is one that physical therapists, you have athletic trainers, strength and conditioning coaches, they all go through the similar process of getting their CSCS. So this one is not as specific as the SCC. This one is definitely going to be for those who are interested in, you know, coaching, but maybe not necessarily in just collegiate. Maybe you would like to work with pro athletes. Maybe you would like to just work in the private sector, or maybe you're a PT or ATC and you're interested in learning more about strength and conditioning, you know, performance training. So that would be a route that I would point coach, at least other people, to kind of go versus going to SEC, because that's more geared towards collegiate strength and conditioning. So those are the two that are definitely always going to be circulating. People are going to talk about. There are a few others that a lot of people talk about. So Mike Boyles has an actual certification for functional coaching, functional training. That one is not the playing field, in my opinion, as a CSCS and SEC, just because a lot of NCAA, you know, professional organizations require that you have at least one of them. So that's why I would point to those. Personally, I don't necessarily believe there is too much and too few. I think, and this is my personal opinion, if you have at least what is required, your experience is definitely going to speak a lot more to that, and your relationships. And your relationships may be built based on your experience and what you're capable of. So I know some NBA professional organizations, strength and conditioning coaches, and I've had conversations with them about certifications and things like that. And I've literally heard teams and coaches tell me, hey, like, we have people that have their PhD trying to apply for some of these positions, but they have no experience. And so it's almost like you have this person who spent their entire life getting certifications, getting all these degrees, but have never coached on the floor. Well, that doesn't add up, you know. And then there are a bunch of things that the book is not going to consider. There is no such thing as an ideal situation in strength conditioning. I think a lot of people, when first get in the industry, as you know, me included, I believe that, oh, this is exactly what it's going to be like. But when the book doesn't tell you that, you know, you're going to have 12 athletes and all of a sudden, you know, something happens and you have 50 athletes staring you in the face, well, there's no way in hell I can 80% back squat 50 players in about 40 minutes. So now all of a sudden that went from a strength training session to a HIIT session with just body weight. So, you know, these are some of the circumstances that, and this happened to me, that the book is not going to be able to tell you, the certification is not going to tell you. And that's just going to be learned through experience or vicariously through other coaches. And that is where I find my value, or at least I find value in learning. Don't necessarily rely on a certification to save you, because at the end of the day, you are what make that certification something, that you are what makes it worthwhile. So I don't know if there's going to be a too few, too many. There are some coaches I hear that have, I don't know how many, maybe shit, 10 certifications, but they're also getting a lot of experience. So I would balance it out. I would say, I don't know, I don't have a number in my head, but I would say for every certification that you do get, make sure you're spending, I mean, at least hours every single day practicing what it is that you learned. Because I think too often that we do get these certifications and they just are there to say we stamped something and we've done something. So long-winded, but basically, if you have what you need, the basics, CSCS, SEC, I believe you are in a position to do something about it. Anything else to me is just extra. I would say another good one that I got personally was corrective exercise. That's definitely been something that kind of opened my mind versus just looking at things as a strength coach necessarily would. Kind of open my eyes a little bit more physical therapy, but it's not physical therapy. So physical therapists don't get mad at me for saying that. But a lot more prehab stuff opened my eyes to that. FRC is a good one. I haven't gone through it completely on my own, but it did kind of open up my eyes a little bit more to training more mobility versus just kind of going in and stretching by developing strength in the end ranges and just a bunch of different cool stuff in there. I'm actually working on my sleep certification. That is one that I think a lot of coaches should definitely invest in, not even just for their athletes, but for themselves. You learn more about sleep, you know, learning more, not just like the basics of sleeping 8 hours, but actually the stages of sleep, how what tips and tricks you can get to get higher quality sleep, maybe even just like going in into a sleep number store to get a sleep number bed, because, you know, your environment, the mattress, everything you're sleeping on, all that matters. So sleep science is definitely something I'm very interested in. There's so many, man. I have a personal bias, so it's hard for me to tell you what is good because your philosophy may be different than mine. But those for sure, I think anything that the NSCA has started to put out, I think it's something to look into. I'm definitely interested in the sports scientist certification, whenever that does drop and whenever that does come out. I know they have some coaches that are testing it out right now, or maybe it's already out. I may be late to the game. But CSCS, man, SEC, you're going to be in good shape. Get experience. Everything else is just the cherry on top. Let's see. Thoughts on GOTA. I don't know too much about that personally. I've had people talk to me about it. I've had people that ask me what I think about it. Apparently, they just got mad at Paul Fabris because he posted something that I guess disagreed with what they believe in. I'm not too sure about GOTA, but I definitely, as I learn more, I will circle back to that. But right now, I do not have the knowledge to sit here and make a educated, explanation of what my thoughts are about it. Let's see. PJF posted about ice baths without ruining necessary inflammation. Could you cover that? Not really sure what you were asking, but if you were asking about taking ice baths without ruining inflammation, It would depend on what your goals are and what phase of the program that you're in. So I think what you're trying to get at is that Paul Fabris was just talking about, you know, the beginning phases of a program. If we're trying to build muscle, we're trying to get the inflammation, our body is going to be inflamed and you're going to be sore. So we don't necessarily want to take that away by trying to ice and basically delaying or taking out that process of that self-rebuild. So I would say if I were to have a player, if this is what you're asking, that wanted to take an ice bath, it would have to be, personally for me, an extreme circumstance where you've got game seven of the playoffs tomorrow and you got to play your high-minute player and you tweaked an ankle. All right, maybe that is a situation where I would have the athlete get into an ice bath just so that athlete can feel more prepared to play the next game. And it can be different scenarios, but I would personally use icing as something that we need in a extreme break glass type of situation. Just because, like, I think PJ was talking about, I haven't seen the video, but it takes away the natural healing process, the inflammation. The body is always going to naturally heal itself the best of its abilities. When we ice, we are basically taking that away. But one thing that we can do, and I know PJ's talked about this, but hot and cold showers, this is something I like to do. We'll go 3 minutes of warm water, 3 minutes of cool water, 2 minutes of warmer water, 2 minutes of cooler water, and then 1 minute of hot water, 1 minute of cold water. So basically what you're doing is you're creating a pumping action in your muscles by dilating and then constricting them with the cold and hot water. So this is a way that we can pump more fluid through the entire body to possibly help with the healing process. So if you are feeling a little sore, this could be an alternative versus just getting into cold water, constricting the blood vessels, and now we're not getting any fluid to these injured areas, or these damaged areas from training. So that would be my answer to that. Hopefully I got your question right, because it was a little bit tough to read. And I don't know if I really explained it the right way, but hopefully I did. Difference between an athletic trainer, personal trainer, CSCS trainer in a team setting. So a CSCS trainer doesn't exist. Athletic trainer, personal trainer, you must be talking about a strength conditioning coach. But an athletic trainer is different from a personal trainer, which is different from a strength conditioning coach. I don't know if you would see a personal trainer in a team setting. Ideally, you would probably see a strength and conditioning coach and athletic trainer. But a strength and conditioning coach is what I would do. So basically, I help to prepare athletes for the physical demands of their sport and also make sure that they are long-term, at least in my opinion, make sure they are healthy enough for their sport and healthy enough to withstand injury. So that is what I would say about my profession specifically. So personal trainers are more so geared towards, I would say, working with the general population, still helping to get clients to reach their goals, specifically fitness goals. But this is going to be very different. So with me and a personal trainer, I may work with a player that played with the Pacers. A personal trainer may work with someone who works at a desk job. The demand is going to be very different. The programming is going to be very different. The needs are going to be very different. So that's basically in a nutshell. If I had to explain that very quickly, the difference between a strength coach and a personal trainer. Athletic trainers, I think a lot of general population get this confused with me. I am not an athletic trainer. Athletic trainers usually work with team physicians. They are part of the healthcare team, the healthcare system. Their primary care is injury, illness prevention, emergency injuries. You have to be licensed to be an athletic trainer in at least 49 states. It might be 50, but it's way different than a strength and conditioning coach. Athletic trainers can actually work in a variety of actually like settings. So they can also work with teams. They can also work with at the high school level, collegiate level. But I'm not an athletic trainer. They're confused, I guess, because of trainer, the word trainer in there. But usually ATCs, I mean, you'll see them And this is not me saying that these are the extent of the ATC's skill set or capabilities, but usually you'll see them before games, taping ankles, making sure that players come in, get treatment, rehabbing injuries, and even just maybe even taking them through some prehab routines. So these are things that I can, well, one, I cannot tape. Two, while I may be able to do take them, an athlete, through a prehabilitation routine or maybe even rehab, I am not able to do that to the extent that an ATC would do it. And I would prefer that an athletic trainer would deal with that. And don't get me wrong, there is way more that athletic trainers do than I am stating right now, but this is just to give a quick synopsis. If anyone does feel any type of way, please shoot me a message if I fumbled the bag on explaining what an ATC is. But basically, they're all three different personal trainers I wouldn't see in the team setting. Strength and conditioning coaches and athletic trainers you would see. And strength and conditioning coaches is more so for the, I would say, preparation side. ATC is kind of more so still on the preparation side, but also making sure that players stay healthy long term and even rehab from injuries. Let's see. Knees over toes training. I think a lot of people give this a bad rap because of old school thoughts, like your knees shouldn't go over your toes in training. I think if done progressively, this can be a great concept to at least prepare athletes to see this position in sport. If you look at basketball, you look at Kemba Walker, you look at Kyrie Irving, you know, name any ball handler that's really breaking ankles. You really look at those positions, like their knees are way over their toes. And in sport, the forces are just way different. The demands, the speed, they're trying to plant, cut, and do everything that is not necessarily the same demands that we're seeing in the weight room. But long story short, yes, like we want to start to develop that knee over toes through training progressively. So I wouldn't give an athlete 500 pounds on their back and say, all right, let's go into a split squat. Let's put your knees past your toes, especially if they're a new athlete. Now, over time, yes, let's do it. But I think it is good, at least to start to put them in positions that they're going to see in the sport. This includes the knees over toes. So that's my opinion. If anyone were to disagree, I would love to hear about that. All right, let's see. How to make shooting fun. I kind of answered this actually on my Instagram, but basically I said, I don't know what fun is when it comes to playing basketball or sport or preparing for competition. For me, I look at if something's fun, maybe something that's more stimulating than just the usual, you know, shooting the corner, putting up shots. Now that could be great for mechanic work, but it's not going to necessarily translate in my opinion, because the speed of you getting the ball, getting into your pocket, and then going up for your jumper, it's going to be different because there's going to be different stimulus. You're going to have the crowd. You're going to have your coach yelling at you. You have defenders running at you. You might be coming off a screen, so your footwork is going to be a little bit different versus standing still. While it's good to get your mechanic work in, to kind of get your reps in, I think we should start to stimulate and challenge that a little bit so we can translate this to sport. So maybe even competing. Plus and minus definitely is a simple one to go with. Maybe you're shooting against a teammate. Maybe you have some sort of, consequences if you don't make X amount in a row, X amount total. Something to challenge you is going to stimulate you and put you in a situation where you're not necessarily just catching and shooting. That's an ideal situation. You want to try to, and don't get me wrong, everyone's a little bit different. Every coach is different. I am not a trainer. This is my opinion, but I would say put them in situations that are uncomfortable, because the game is going to be uncomfortable, and basketball is chaos. So if we're shooting in a very, my personal opinion, a very static environment where not much is happening, then are we really getting better? We're getting the reps in, but are we really going to translate to the game where when you catch the ball, you got three defenders running out, closing out to you in the corner, and somebody in your ear in the crowd telling you, who knows, all right, like you suck, whatever. That is going to be more reminiscent of what the game is going to be like. So make it competitive. Don't make it fun. I would say make it competitive. sure that you're still getting your reps in, but just challenge yourself a little bit. All right, let's see. So hopefully I'm answering every question with an actual answer, not necessarily just kind of giving half answers. But that was it for the first half. Okay, so let's see. There's some questions I got last night. Proper timing to ice. It depends. I answered this too. But why are you icing? Are you sore? Are you in pain? Do you have to be ready for tomorrow? Are we just doing it because we want to not be sore? It depends on when or what it is that you're trying to get out of the icing. If you're just doing it just because, like I said earlier, I don't know if that's a great idea personally. But if we have game 7 tomorrow, then yeah, let's try to get you right, get you feeling good. The placebo effect is very powerful. So if you think it works, you feel like game 7 you need this ice, well, who the hell am I to tell you that you don't need it? Like, let's get you in this ice bath. Let's get you right, and let's get you going. So that's my answer. Should a skinny hooper work on developing size and athleticism at the same time? There's a lot of context that needs to be had here. It depends, you know, what is your age? You know, how old are you? What is your training age? What position do you play? What is your style of play? What does your team need from you? Your physical needs, you know, all these are questions that we got to answer before I can really even give you an answer. Because if you're, you know, young, your training age is low, and maybe you are a center or a back to the basket type of player, okay, yeah, let's put some size on you because, yeah, you got to bang down low. Plus developing size, putting size on can lead to greater increases in force production. So basically you're getting more athletic by adding some size. It's not always the case, but basically, yes. But if you don't need that, then why are we really putting size on you? I think a lot of players think that by gaining more muscle, you're putting yourself in a position to be more athletic, and that's not the case. Yes, don't get me wrong, cross-sectional area of a muscle definitely does matter when it comes to athleticism, aka the size of your muscle, but there's way more from the nervous system that we're not considering. How many muscle fibers are we turning on, right? The brain's controlling that. How fast do we send signals to these muscles? What is the conduction speed? Like, there's so much more of the nervous system that plays a role in how athletic we are that we miss. A lot of players will think, if I just get bigger and stronger, cool. If that were the case, then powerlifters would be dunking the damn ball, right? And don't get me wrong, some powerlifters may be able to do that, but that is not always the case. So I would say it depends, man. It depends on your situation. There's a lot of context needed. But size does not inherently always mean more athleticism. Size can translate to more athleticism. That doesn't mean it's always what you need. Let's see. How can I fly like Jordan? I answered this too. Fly like yourself. Jordan was unique. You're unique. What Jordan did, his genetics, his training, his size, all that's going to be very unique to Michael Jordan. It does not mean that is what you need to do. So don't ever feel like you need to train like a certain player to become that player. Work towards your strengths. Work towards what you need, and work towards what makes you unique. Don't try to focus on flying like Jordan. Try to fly like you, to your best potential, and then we can move from there. Do I have online programs? Find me on Future Fit. Pretty simple. Type in Future Fit in the App Store. I do offer online training, so if you are interested in joining the program, I will be available there. You got to live in the United States, though. I won't be able to work with you if you live out of the States. It's going to be too hard. But I do have a few spots left open in my coaching capacity. So I think I have 5, maybe 6 more. So if you are interested, please shoot me a message, or just find me on Future Fit. How to train so that we have healthy tendons? It's a good question. To have healthy tendons, so tendons take the longest to make some adaptations. So the beginning of my programs, I typically kind of throw in more low-level stuff. So it depends on the player, the athlete, and women, whether you're a man or a woman. But I throw in some low-level plyos, so some pogo hops, maybe some even jumping rope, single leg hops, double leg hops. It doesn't necessarily matter. But just throwing in low-level plyometrics to start to load the tendons over time. You can even, depending on what tendon you're talking about, we can also do eccentric training. So training the tendon through a healthy range of motion to make sure we have strength and we keep our range of motion. With sport, you have to understand, as you're running and jumping, you're not necessarily moving through full ranges of motion all the time. You're moving through shorter ranges of motion. Because of that, we may lose the strength of that full range of motion. So the beginning, for sure, I like to train through a full range of motion. I call it a healthy set. That way, at the very least, you know, while we're doing our plyos, we're doing our depth jumps, whatever the case is, we're also training through the full range of motion so we don't lose that range of motion. We do want stiffness, but we don't want too much stiffness. Over time, that's how you're going to train your tendons to be healthy. It's not going to happen as soon as your nervous system picking up maybe some more strength, or your body picking up a little bit more strength. You get in the beginner gains. But over time, as we start to develop more stiffness to the tendon, or even more strength through a full range of motion, because tendons actually change their properties depending on how you train them, over time, that's going to actually be a lot more beneficial versus just saying, okay, like, yeah, we did a couple line jumps, now we're good. Nah, this is something we have to do at the beginning of the phase. I would say the beginning of an entire summer if you're not playing basketball. If you're playing basketball, you're going to load the tendons anyway. But if you're not playing basketball, COVID, this is definitely something we'd be interested in. Low-level plyos, jump rope, even low-level line jumps start to develop a little bit more elasticity and strength in the tendons. One thing I like to do is two up, one down. This, I would grab a dumbbell or whatever's got some resistance and some load. Go up on 2 feet. Once we get on our toes, we're coming back down slowly on 1 foot, really getting a large range of motion in that ankle joint specifically. Definitely something I like to do. Even your patellar tendon, if you do, let's say you have jumper's knee, you can easily just do a wall sit. I mean, it's pretty basic, but sit and hold for 3 rounds of 45 seconds. This allows the patellar tendon to, instead of working elastically, now it can start to lengthen and actually get a little bit more strength in that area. There's so many things you can do, man. But hopefully that answered your question. To have healthy tendons, start training them now if you're not playing basketball. Over time, we got to make sure that we're developing the tendons to load heavy and slow. That way, once we go light and fast, we've already developed the base. And one question I actually wanted to put out there, because I actually got asked this in the DMs, but just wanted to make sure that everyone actually got a hold of this too. This is from my boy T. Shout out to T. He says, I see you implemented a lot of different equipment as of late, such as the title tank, whoop, ball attachment. How do you go about navigating the market to figure out what you want to use? What boxes had to be ticked in order for you to decide something to use? And this is an excellent question. So I just want everyone to know ahead of time, I don't just pick random shit to buy. That's never my intention, especially because this stuff is expensive. But for me, I always have a problem that I'm trying to solve. With the title tank specifically, I actually wanted to find something that I could easily load, that I could travel with. But that was also going to be something that's going to be more so challenging the neuromuscular control, aka more stability of our players, especially because I work with basketball players. You guys are super long. You guys got spider legs and spider arms. So being able to control those limbs in space, the awareness, for me, like, that's huge. So I was kind of looking at different stuff, and I actually saw Matt Cooper using one. Reached out to him, talked to him a little bit about it, bought one for myself, and I've been using it ever since. So it's pretty easy to load. Just fill it with water, easily, able to travel with it. It's not like it's a 40, 50-pound dumbbell. And then in the case of, let's say, like Whoop Watch, the Whoop Watch for me, I needed a way to track recovery that wasn't subjective. So it's really easy for me to ask an athlete, how do you feel? Sometimes players will tell me the truth. Sometimes they won't. They'll say, oh, I'm good, man. But then in the day, like, I understand you guys are competitive. You guys are grinders. You don't want me to know, or maybe you just don't want to admit to yourself that maybe you're a little tired, fatigued. So I'm programming based off of like opinions. For me, I'm like, well, I don't want to just keep relying on opinions. I want to get some objective numbers behind it. So I got the Whoop Watch. It tells me how long you slept. It tells me your deep sleep. It tells me a bunch more information, how recovered you are. So now when I get an athlete that comes in and says, I feel fine, I see they slept 3 hours and their recovery is in the red. I'm like, well, I don't know about that. And then over time, as they pick up better habits, they start to realize how bad they actually felt. So it's also a teaching experience for me when I use the Whoop Watch. Anytime I get something new, it's because I have a problem. I just got a Just Jump mat, and that's because it was taking way too long to do assessments. I wanted something quick, something that was still going to be objective, and that wasn't going to take forever in setup. So I got a Just Jump mat. You literally step on the mat, you jump, and it gives out an instant number, vertical jump, how high you jumped, how long you were in the air. And I can get, in all honesty, I can probably get 10 athletes in less than 5 minutes if I really wanted to push that. So for me, it was a no-brainer to get it, not only because of the accuracy, but also because it was just way faster than what I was doing originally. Vertec takes way too long. I got to get so many measurements. So anytime, if there are any coaches or trainers out here listening, anytime you want to go and you're looking at a product, I would ask yourself, what does this solve? Is it solving anything? Are we just buying it just to buy it? Especially in the business world, what I've learned is you have to justify what it is that you're getting. So if you're buying another set of dumbbells, or are you just getting it just to get it? Or is it because you have so many clients that now you want to make sure that nobody's waiting around for dumbbells? That's a valid reason, right? Now you're keeping your clients happy. And long term, that equals more money for you if you're an entrepreneur. So these are questions that you really got to ask yourself when you are looking at something, or if you have problems right now, you know, that maybe you're not thinking about solving or haven't really put too much thought into. Always, 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 when you get something or you're looking at something, ask yourself, what is this solving? What is this doing for me? But hopefully that answered your question. Okay. I actually just went through all the questions. So if you guys have any other questions, you guys have anything else that you wanted to ask me, please shoot me a message. Let me know. I was planning on this one being about an hour. Hopefully I got through everyone's questions. If you guys do have anything else, please feel free to reach out to me. Also, just wanted to announce at the very end that we are finally able to start training athletes more so in the Bay Area. So if you are in the Bay Area, you're listening to this, Basketball and Barbells Performance is finally official. Now I'm able to actually consult with teams, consult with trainers, coaches. So if you do want to talk to me, if you want to learn more about my methods, if you want to learn more about how I market myself, whatever it is, you can always feel free to reach out to me. I'll put the link for my website. I'll also put the link for my emails. If any players want to get in touch with me, you can shoot me a DM or you can follow those same steps. Anything you guys need, thank you so much for listening to this. Thank you so much for your support. Let's keep being great. Let's go build. Thank you for listening to the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I really hope you all got major value from today's episode. Please leave a rating and review of the show, and don't forget to tune into the next episode.